Peace and love. Peace and love.
Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
My mom always said life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
You know what I am? I'm a housewife that figured it out.
Wow, 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 wow!
And now, here's the host of Good Things Radio, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome to Good Things Radio. My name is Brooke Taylor. This is episode number 129, and on the show today, we are joined by brother John Michael Paul. Yeah! This is really long overdue. I'm so glad to finally get him on the show. He is my Holy Land traveling buddy with our group going to Israel last year. But then we actually met up over the weekend. He's from Laredo, Texas, originally from Michigan, but has lived everywhere from Siberia to Corsica and happened to be in town. So we gave a Holy Land presentation. But then we were also able to meet up to talk a little bit about Lent. So this is going to be the first time that you'll actually hear him on the show. And I think you're going to like it because he tells us a couple things just to give you a quick preview. He says, number one, that we often think of Lent as a time of no. We are very disciplined and we restrict ourselves more, which can be good. But he essentially says Lent is actually about a time of saying yes, opening our hearts and our arms. So he explains that. Also, he says, we are a church on retreat. The whole world takes this journey together. And I love that image too. So he's going to join us. It's part of our three-part mini series preparing for Ash Wednesday, which is, of course, February 14th. It's coming right up. So this is part two. We'll get to that on today's show. Also, feedback from our last episode about that Barna study that teens are the least Christian generation in American history, and what you think about that, your input specifically from Barbara. So we're going to hear from her and also a movie recommendation for you today. So a little bit of everything. Let's jump in. Just a quick Safe for the Whole Family movie plug. We watched it last week. It's a documentary, which my kids, whenever I say that now, give a collective groan, which I don't know why. Why don't they have the same enthusiasm? Because it's always an underdog story. So when I share the summary, I would think that normally they'd be like, yeah. But the other day, when I pulled this up, my oldest son, who's 16, he said, Mom, please, nothing inspirational. He said, we want action. Maybe it's a boy thing, but they watched it. I think we all liked it. I know I did. And for me, this was one of those films where you think, this should be shown in schools. This needs to be in PSR, CCD, whatever the program is that you might have for religious ed, youth group movie night. It has all of those elements that can help people see that their lives have a purpose. And I think teenagers today in particular need to know their life. One person can do mighty things, and yet also we're never too old or too young. And it's the true story of Charles Mully. So the name of the movie is called Mully. And I'm going to read the movie description. It says this: what happens when a six-year-old boy in Kenya is abandoned by his family and left to raise himself on the streets? Mully is no ordinary rags-to-riches tale. It is the true story of Charles Mully, whose unlikely, stratospheric rise to wealth and power leaves him questioning his own existence, searching for meaning in life. Against the better judgment of family and community, Mully sets out to enrich the fate of orphaned children across Kenya, which, by the way, number about 100,000. One in five children in Kenya will not live to see their fifth birthday. That's staggering. It says, jeopardizing his own life and his own security of family, Charles Mully risks everything and sets in motion a series of events that is nothing short of astonishing. I saw this in, I think it was the Ignatius Press catalog. It happened to be on Amazon. It was also shown in theaters across the country, although I missed this somehow last fall. And it's really good. It's a Christian faith-based film. It's a true story. Mully's still alive. This is still happening. And I want to just share the trailer. Check it out.
I remember one day I woke up and everybody had gone. felt I was abandoned, a child without parent. I became a beggar. I became a street boy. I walked to the city of Nairobi to get a new life. I was so happy. I have a family, I have a car, I had a dream. I want to do business.
We formed Muliways Agencies Limited. And then my dad had a monopoly in oil and gas.
It was my time. I was really tormented by these boys in the street. I saw faces of me, and I could not work anymore. I cried, why is it that God wanted me to take me back again? I will never, ever work for money again.
That's called total madness. That's what it is.
Says that he needed to sell everything and start helping the poor in the society, the children who are abandoned.
How do you let go of what you hold dearly? And how do you decide when to share your love?
Kenya was burning. We can't let this happen. We have to do something.
The children did not have food. If we don't step in, children are going to die. We had 3 children, 4 children, and the number kept on growing.
He said, welcome, this is your family now. These are all your brothers and sisters.
That is a miracle.
We are one family. We are one Kenya. When I remember that, I see the impossible becoming possible.
So there you go. It's just called Mully, M-U-L-L-Y, and worth watching. It's on Amazon. You can find it streaming.
Well, the mail must go through. The mail must go through. No matter if it rains or snows, the mail must go through. I said the mail.
So last week on the show, we took a look at a new study from Barna that calls today's teens the least Christian generation in American history. So if you're interested in the details, we dug into the data on that, as well as heard from Father Nathan Cromley. He had some really, I think, much needed words of encouragement. But I also wanted to share some feedback, one note in particular that we received from Barb, and she says this. She said, as a religious education teacher, my students do not attend Mass because their parents do not attend Mass. It's the grandparents pushing for the religious education or the parents just thinking it's something they're supposed to do. I know this is a common problem everywhere, and it's very frustrating. I also wanted to agree with your point about science and faith. The point in the article talked about as teens look at science as more the end-all be-all, they don't see that it fits with religion or with faith, which we know isn't true, but that's what the survey's showing. And she says, as science teacher, specifically an anatomy and physiology teacher, I completely agree that the more I learn about the human body and how amazing it is, the more it increases my faith. And finally, Father Nathan did bring up a good point about not getting frustrated. My daughter and I have been to Abbey Youth Fest 5 years in a row. 5,000 teens on their knees on the ground for adoration by candlelight will restore anyone's faith in teenagers. Amen. Beautiful, Barbara. And one of the things that we're doing too, when you talk about the parents not going to Mass, yes, I think we can all agree and nod in vigorous solidarity that this is a reality of the challenge that we're facing. And how do we get the parents ignited? And it's often the kids that are taking their parents or saying, hey, can we go to church? There's many variations. I know there's pockets of very passionate Christians, but we can always do more. And so for us in our area, what we've seen lately and why especially the teen heart has been on my radar is we in the last few months have had 8 teenagers in our immediate community and surrounding towns that have taken their own lives, that have committed suicide. It has made news. They're calling it, the headlines say, a contagion of suicides, because that's what you start to wonder. I remember asking Angela, our Dr. Angela, psychologist that you've heard on the show recently, and is this something that can be a terrible trend. I hate even to use that word, but she said yes. When kids begin to see, you know, that was a viable option and that's what so-and-so did. They went through with it. I'm going to do it too. There's so many things that play in, especially the layers of social media. But again, that word, even being called a contagion of suicide, it has raised alarm bells. What we've started to do is an awesome idea that we got from Michelle Fainley and their group in Columbus. They have St. Agatha's School, and they have something called Parents Rock. And ROCK is an acronym. It stands for Raising Our Catholic Kids. Super simple. Anybody can do it. All we're doing is reserving our social hall, putting together a free night of wine and cheese for parents, and having speakers come in, local parents that have seen their kids remain in the faith and sharing their wisdom and their tips. What did you do that helped foster a love of the Lord, a lifelong friendship of Jesus, respect for their parents, all the things we hope for? And as my friend Linda says, you can always do A and B, but not get C. You might have everything that looks perfect on paper, but between our different neurologies and challenges and predispositions and temperaments, and one terrible bully that happens to enter our child's life, everything can go off the rails. Everything that we thought we knew, everything we thought we could control can change. So we need to help one another. And that's what this evening's about. So it's just a free night. And in this case, we have it coming up at the end of February where Melody Lyons, she's a friend of the show. She's a blogger. She also attended the Arise Retreat the last 2 years. And her husband is a fire chief. He also happens to be an amazing theologian. They have 8 children and they range from, I think, 21 down to 1 or 2, their youngest. And so she and her husband are coming to speak. And what I like about that is they can speak to the older kids and also the youngers, those that are navigating social media and everything that we're dealing with now. And then we also have Bobby Benkovich, who was on the show, and her husband talking about how they were able to, through a lot of curveballs, challenges, raise their 2 children, 2 children who are now adults, parents who regularly, faithfully attend Mass. So I just want to throw that out there because it's something easy that was able to put together. And you never know when you do these events if anyone's even going to show up. And Andrea, my friend Andrea Singarella, and I are doing it together. And people are. They're sending her the RSVPs. There's interest. I think the wine and cheese does play into that too. But just, I will let you know how it goes. Something little as we try to bless the hearts of our kids and pray for wisdom to know how to build strong men and women of God. And thank you again to Barb for your feedback.
Join the show. Share your feedback on Voxer. Find Brooke at BrookeTaylor1 or shoot us an email at feedback@goodthingsradio.com and be part of the conversation.
As promised, our part 2 of our 3-part series, sitting down with Brother John Michael Paul with the community of St. John. So he is a fellow brother of our resident Padre in Your Pocket, Father Nathan. We had an opportunity to just sit down. He was kind enough to share a few of his Lenten ponderings and preparations as we count the days to Ash Wednesday. And I think you're going to like what he has to say. Take a listen.
It is a joy and a pleasure to be joined by Brother John Michael Paul. And if you've listened for a while, you know he's like a friend just kind of from a distance, because I've talked a lot about him, our trip to the Holy Land, a lot of the beautiful reflections and adventures that we were able to share during that time in November. So I'm so excited to officially introduce him to you now on Good Things Radio. Welcome to the show, Brother John Michael Paul.
Thank you so much, Brooke. It's an honor to be here and a joy to be here in Ohio.
And yeah, you've kind of been all over the place in just a short amount of time, talking to our middle school students at our school. You and I did a Holy Land presentation, and I know you're going back to Texas in a few days, but we're also together, all of us journeying closer to Lent. That's in right. The beginning of this season, this penitential time. And so I wanted to just get your perspective on this. I know as a community, Father Nathan shares a Padre in Your Pocket, a tidbit of wisdom often, but you share a community, you are brothers. Mm-hmm. And so you're going to be walking through this Lenten journey as well. Can you give us a little bit of an insight, a peek into what you do to prepare for Lent?
First of all, I'd like to go into the significance of the 40 days, because there's the 40 days of Lent, but there's also the 40 days between the transfiguration, the exaltation, the cross. There's a certain amount of time that we're given in order to enter into this mystery of Christ's passion, death, and resurrection. And I think one of the sort of traps we can get into Lent is we often think of what we're going to give up. You know, no chocolate, no wine, no peanut butter. And Lent becomes a time of no, no, no. And it is sort of missing the point that Lent is more of a time of yes, yes, yes. And the number of people that I've known that say, well, I said I was going to have chocolate, but then I slipped and then I just started eating chocolate. And we sometimes take it too materially, and we realize that one of the most important fasts can be a spiritual fast. And if we think of St. James and his epistle, he says that if we are able to control our tongues, we're able to control our whole person. It's one of the smallest parts of our body. And so we see that there's a spiritual fasting that we need to enter into. And one of the components of that spiritual fasting, I think, is to realize that we are not in control. That if we are going to give up something, it's for us to realize that we were created by someone else, and we are created for someone else. We're created by God, for God, for knowing Him, for discovering His love. And so our Lenten penances, or Lenten resolutions, need to be in view of that. So many times, I think that what is overlooked is that Lent can be a time of additional positive things. You know, I will do an additional time of prayer. I will offer up a certain amount of time of each day for service. I will say nice things about this person that I tend to say things that aren't so nice. So that our words that can be words that can, like, tear down can be words that are blessing. Benedicere means to say something good of someone. When God, and that's where we have the word blessing. So a blessing is when God says something good about us, and we can say that about other people. And I think that that's really where we have the work of the metanoia, because we hear that word metanoia, it's like a change of thought. And so that change of thought comes from our opening ourselves up all the more to God, who is always yes. And maybe one of the persons that we can turn to who always has been yes is the Virgin Mary, who said yes when the angel came and announced her that she would become the mother of the Most High. And she continued to say yes all the way up to the cross and all the way up through her assumption into her glorification as Queen of Heaven and Earth.
Well, listening to you, it's clear that these are ponderings that are often on your spirit, on your heart, that you've studied, that you know through and through. And I hear your words, and it's this wonderful alarm bell of yes in my own heart when I hear that. But in the day-to-day goings-on of my family, where I'm busy, and I think, am I going to have time to sit and reflect on all that you just said? What advice do you have to the busy mom, any person of any stage, who struggles with this idea of being able to enter into it in such a profound way?
Well, first of all, I'm not certain that I know it through and through, but I try. I think that one of the things that we need to look is our prayer life is, first of all, our intention that we have of directing ourselves towards God, of opening ourselves up to Him and the mystery of His work and His saving grace in our lives. But I think another thing is that we sometimes think of prayer as this very ominous thing that I have to spend so much time and I'm not doing anything. I'm like in a room all by myself and then I get distracted. So what's it good for? And then the bell rings and then my kids and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And that there are two things I'd like to talk about. One is what I call the microwave prayer. Have you ever heard of the microwave prayer?
No. Mm-mm.
Well, compare a microwave oven to a regular oven. What's the difference?
Well, the speed.
Yeah, it goes much faster. So the microwave prayer, I tell this to people, you know, young people come to confession and I say, well, how about prayer? Like, oh, I don't have time. I said, oh yeah, you're very busy. And they said, oh yes, yes I am. Would you like to try the microwave prayer? Well, sure. So we get up, the first thing we do, boom, on our knees, we say, Lord, I offer up this day to you. All the good that I will do, it's for your greater glory and honor. Help me to do your will. How long does that take? 6, maybe 7 seconds about? Okay. And then in the evening, you know, that moment that where you're just going to stretch out into that delicious oblivion of sleep, just before that you go, boom, on your knees. Lord, I put this day back into your hands. All the good I did, that's for you. Where did I not do good? And you let the Lord tell you a little bit. That, okay, Lord, I am sorry. help me to have a good sleep so that I may better serve you tomorrow. That takes him about 11, 12 seconds. So about 20 seconds, I tell people, you know, do you have about 20 seconds you can spare in their life? And I've never had anyone say no.
And even the posture of prayer, you said on your knees.
Oh,
So that's important.
I think that's important because it's the attitude of adoration. It's the attitude of requesting, of asking. And what we do with our body, our soul follows. And what we do is that we bookend our day in prayer. And that is important, that the intention is that the whole day be given to prayer. But it's not that I'm conscious of prayer. The Lord doesn't ask us to be conscious of ourselves praying, because if we're doing that, we're just looking at ourselves praying. So we're centering on ourselves, which isn't very useful. Mm-hmm. But he's asking us to be open up to what he is wanting in our lives. And so another person I'd like to mention is Jose Maria Escrivá, the founder of Opus Dei. And when I was a young man working in Los Angeles, I would go to Spiritual Direction with the group of Opus Dei, and they would talk about our work being prayer and the sanctification of work, which I thought was just very beautiful. And so to say, okay, Lord, all this work I'm going to do today, if it's going to be the washing, it's going to be the drying, it's going to be, you know, the cleaning or whatever, you know, my work, let that be my prayer today. And so our work can become this yes, and that our whole Lenten experience would be wanting to live more the yes of Mary in our daily life, knowing that it's not necessarily that we're isolating ourselves in long prayer, that can be part of it, but it's this intention that we have to make our whole life a prayer.
And what about for you? How is that going to be played out? Do you set goals? Do you sit and reflect? Or is it just organically? I don't know. How do you, for Lent? Because for me, it's very systematic, which might even defeat the purpose. And having a family too, I feel like it's my job to help shepherd them through this season. So we do something called Landing Time, which if you've listened to the podcast, you know all about, where we gather and it's kind of a soft place to land in the evening as a family. And whether we read one story of a saint or we do a novena or something, like you said, it doesn't have to be long, but it's us gathering together in the citadel, you know, of our home, right, and making it a holy place. And I guess in that way, it's like a community, because you do gather together as brothers at a point, right, and pray.
What you're talking about is, as Vatican II says, that the family is the domestic church. It's the basic unit of the church. So when you gather, you make ecclesia, the gathering together. And so you form your church. And you with your husband, you share those three roles that are shared with the bishop: to teach, to govern, to sanctify. And how beautiful that you have this landing space, this landing pad, that you are able to have that, you know, coming together the day and sort of also debriefing the day.
Yes.
You asked me, how is it going to play out? And then you said, I don't know. In my life, well, I don't know either. It's one of those big unknowns. And one of the things that I think is important going into Lent is to realize that it's going to be God's time, God's work, and God's results, which are oftentimes not mine. And so one of the qualities that I think we can ask to have given to us is the quality of patience and long-suffering. And long-suffering is one of the fruits of the Holy Spirit. When you read it in the Galatians, he talks about all the different sins and the fruits of the Spirit are this, and one of them is long-suffering. And if you think about it, what is the object, the biggest object of our long suffering in our lives? Who do we have to suffer with the most in our lives?
Ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So ask for that patience and that long suffering with ourselves. And
there's the teacher in you and the questioning student ourselves. But yes.
That's right. And so that long suffering is, okay, to be able to put up with myself, to see that, okay, I'm in progress, and maybe my progress seems like I'm even regressing, and that one thing that we cannot judge is the quality of our prayer life. We can take time for prayer, but when people say, oh, I had a great time of prayer, I said, well, how do you know? Oh, because I was paying attention to the Lord. Well, how do you know? Were you were actually paying attention to yourself, paying attention to the Lord. So actually, maybe sometimes our prayer life is all the more pleasing to the Lord when we're struggling with, you know, distraction, temptation, just not wanting to be there, boredom, dryness, because we're not looking at how well we're doing. We're not looking at ourselves. We're trying to look at him. And I think that oftentimes we can judge our prayer life in a way that's not fitting. That's where it's so important. Yes, one of the things that is important is confession.
Yeah.
Because we as Catholics have that great sacrament of confession where we objectify what we're accusing ourselves of. And sometimes as a priest, I have to say, what you're accusing yourself of is not a sin because of this or that, or it actually, it's what you did was the right thing, you know? And so you're like making yourself feel guilty because maybe someone felt badly or something, but you can't control the result of what your actions are if you're acting what you think, you're doing what you think is the right thing to do. And then on the contrary, we can also hear, maybe someone will say, well, I did this, and well, actually that was pretty serious. You know, to have that adjustment of what we say, because we're not often the best judge. But then one is the most amazing thing is that for those people that say, I don't need to go to confession, I do it directly to God. And yes, God does forgive us, but you can go directly to God, but you will never hear the words, your sins are forgiven.
And that absolution.
That absolution, yeah. And so there is a beautiful gift that we have through the sacrament of confession, that we have that assurance of our forgiveness, and we realize that we are put again onto that road of progressing to God. And I think that's what the essential element of Lent is on that road of progressing to God, that our metanoia, our change of mind, is an ongoing thing. It's not like when we get to Easter, it's all done. And that's where we can have a disappointment. Oftentimes in religious life, we're told that Lent actually is a lot easier than Easter time because we're trying to follow Christ who is risen. He's no longer of this world. He's glorified. And that's where we can, you know, Lent, you're sort of putting on the armor. And then when Easter comes, we made it. And then it's like, boom, you know.
That's
like so
interesting.
It's very interesting how we have, Lent is a very blessed time. It's like the whole church going into retreat. And so that's what I like to live it as a time of retreat. And concretely, what we do it as a community is that we have a chapter. We say, what are our Lenten resolutions? Or what are our Lenten practices? What are we going to do? What are our days of fasting? What are we going to give up as a community? What are we going to do in addition as a community? What sort of service will we do? And this, we make it like a common covenant. And that's, and that way we help one another in our path.
So I'm going to put you on the spot. If you could pick one book of the Bible to study during Lent, and one book that would be your favorite read for the Lenten season that you could recommend to others, what would you say?
You're going to find this very odd, but I would say to read the book of Revelation.
Ooh, and I like that, okay. Yeah,
and the book of Revelation, because Lent is a time of struggle, it's a time of temptation. We follow Christ in his temptation in the desert, and when we're in temptation, what do we need? We need hope. And the book of Revelation is the book of hope. The book of Christ's triumph over all the forces of evil, over Babylonia, which we know was Rome, over the beast of the sea, the beast of the of land, and triumph over all that could separate us from God. And so that's what we read in the book of Revelation. And you need to read it with a study guide, because you read through it one time and you're just like, what's this all mean? But when you have just the basic like explanation book, it comes alive in such an amazing way. And to realize that we are already triumphant, we are already victorious, and that, as St. Paul says, what can separate us from the love of Christ? Tribulation, hunger, deportation, accidents, shipwrecks, nothing can separate from the love of Christ. And maybe that's what we can learn during this Lent.
And what book would you recommend?
For a book is read?
Yeah.
I would say a book that would help you explain the book of Revelation. Yeah, like a little study guide of the book of Revelation.
Good. Wow, a lot of great takeaways. And I love the idea where you started that it's yes.
Yeah.
And I think when I imagine going to the desert, everything else is stripped away. And I think of kind of a severe time, and it doesn't need to be that way. It can actually be an oasis.
Right.
And it's a beautiful thought. Thank you so much, Father.
God bless you. Thank you so much, Brooke. It's been a joy.
We are a church on retreat. Amen to that. Thank you. Thank you again so much to Brother John Michael Paul. And I saw that Pope Francis just made a pre-Lenten retreat. And I want to read a little bit of what he's studying, which I thought was really neat. It's called In Praise of Thirst. That's the title. Apprentices of Awe is the name of the meditation. So this whole retreat being led by a Portuguese priest. It says the presentation, Apprentices of Awe, will be followed by 9 others in less than a week. Themes of the thirst for nothing, thirst for Jesus, tears and thirst. I would love to hear that one. And to desire the beatitude of thirst. And what struck me about that was the humble little chapel at the Arise Retreat has the words, "I thirst," next to the crucifix behind the altar at the Loyola Retreat House. And I just thought that it was so fitting because every day we are in that chapel and we are looking at those words next to the crucifix, "I thirst." So it reminded me to begin now in a special way. Our team has been for months praying over every single woman who will be pilgrimaging, making that journey to Loyola Retreat House in April, but just wanted to offer that because I think it does tie in. So God bless you for all the ways you give your yes and prepare. And as Brother said, look to Our Lady as we settle into the beginning days of Lent coming up very soon. And the floor is open. What are you doing in particular? I like that he shared reading the book of Revelation, getting a study guide for that. We have a wonderful listener, and I want to share a little bit more about those details with you. Lisa Daly doing the Choose Joy group study for Lent, the 52-week devotional journey that I know you know all about. And so she has a group of women who are meeting from across the country once a week, getting together online and doing this study throughout Lent. And on the next episode, we'll give you the details if you want to sign up and get in there right before the beginning of Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent starts. Would love your feedback. Feedback@goodthingsradio.com or Brooke Taylor. And the number one is how you can reach out, or like Barb, check in on Facebook and let us know what you think. A big thank you also to my producer for his dynamic skills and quick work. He is a producer extraordinaire. If you are interested in any audio, your own show, you name it, check him out at cominghomestudio.com. Thank you so much to my friend Mark Cumming. And thank you for taking the time to listen to the show, share it with others, review it on iTunes, subscribe, become a good friend of the show. God bless you all, friends, as we are journeying as a church on retreat. Until next time, friends, peace and love.